title of our lesson this morning is Touching the Hem of His Garment. This is a line that has been used many times throughout the years. A song by this title was put out by Sam Cooke way back in 1959. For those who don't remember the name, he put out such songs as Only 16, Twisting the Night Away, Chain Gang, Wonderful World, among others. Another song with different lyrics but very similar title, about the same topic, was put out by a religious group called the Spencers in 2014. There are poems, ministries, clothing lines that have used this title. More than a dozen books have been written with this title. We're going to look at the story behind this statement this morning. If you'd like to turn with me to Luke chapter 8, Luke's text is going to serve as the basis for this account. I'll go ahead and read verses 40 through 48. This account occurs, as you're probably familiar, in the middle of another account, and we'll see the beginning of that setting the context. Luke chapter 8, beginning in verse 40, says, "It was that when Jesus returned, the multitude welcomed him, for they were all waiting." This is, he returned from across the sea, having healed a man who possessed many demons, or was possessed by many demons. Verse 41, "And behold, there came a man named Jairus. He was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying. But as he went, the multitudes thronged him. Now a woman, having a flow of blood for 12 years, who had spent all her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any, came from behind and touched the border of his garment. And immediately her flow of blood stopped. And Jesus said, 'Who touched me?' When all denied it, Peter and those with him said, 'Master, the multitudes throng you and press you, and you say, "Who touched me?" But Jesus said, 'Somebody touched me, for I perceived power going out from me.' Now when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him. She declared to him in the presence of all the people the reason she had touched him and how she was immediately healed. And he said to her, 'Daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace.'" This is the story of a woman in serious trouble. It's the story of her desperation. It is the story of her determination. It's the story of her deliverance. It's the story of her declaration. How does this story relate to us today? Verse 43 again, we're introduced to the situation of this woman. It says, "A woman having a flow of blood for 12 years, who had spent all her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any, came behind and touched the border of his garment." Her problem, her difficulty is revealed in this one verse. She had an incurable sickness. She had been subject to hemorrhage for 12 years. And Luke, the author of this letter, being a physician, describes her case as incurable. Says she could not be healed by any physicians. We see that she had depleted her finances. She'd spent all her money on this illness. Luke says in verse 43 as well, that she'd spent all her livelihood on physicians. Also, this would have made her ceremonially unclean. Leviticus chapter 15 verses 19 through 27 tells, according to the law, how this in fact would have made her unclean ceremonially. She would have been banned from temple worship. And if she touched anyone else, that person would have been deemed unclean as well. Numbers 19, verse 22 indicates that. This may have been why she merely wanted to touch the hem or the border or the edge of his robe, his garment, depending on your translation that you're reading. Mark's account of this woman occurs in chapter 5 of his gospel. And then all the way at the end of chapter 6, we read in Mark 6, verse 56, wherever he entered into villages, cities, or the country, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged him that they might just touch the hem of his garment. And as many as touched him were made well. I have to wonder if this became an idea that became prominent after this encounter with this woman here. But the hem or the border, the edge, may refer to the tassel that was worn on Jewish garments. In Numbers 15, verses 38 through 40, God gives instructions regarding this. He says, speak to the children of Israel, tell them to make tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and to put a blue thread in the tassels of the corners. And you shall have the tassel that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord and do them, and that you may not follow the harlotry to which your own heart and your own eyes are inclined, and that you may remember and do all my commandments and be holy for your God. Deuteronomy 22, verse 12 says this, you shall make tassels on the four corners of the clothing with which you cover yourself. Regarding the Pharisees, of course, they took everything to extreme. In Matthew 23, verse 5, Jesus said, everything they do is done for people to see. They make their phylacteries wide, and the tassels on their garments they make long. This woman was physically desperate. Her health was gone. She was financially desperate. Her money was gone. She was spiritually desperate. She couldn't participate in temple worship. She is symbolic of all people apart from Christ. Physically, we're all doomed. We're all moving toward death. Yet people are still trying to find Ponce de Leon's fountain of youth. Revelation 22, however, tells us basically where it's located, and they're not going to find it here in the form of a fountain or an operation or in a pill. Financially, money cannot buy what we need, yet you have St. Peter's Basilica still standing, built by the Catholic Church with money that people paid so that they could have some of their sins forgiven. Man has come a long way medically. Man has come a long way technologically, but all the money in the world cannot buy immortality, nor can it buy the forgiveness of one single sin. Spiritually, this woman was separated from the temple, and in a similar way, our sin separates us from God. Mankind is inclined to be an independent creature. He thinks that he can solve all his problems and all his difficulties. This woman reminds us that things can get out of control, and things are out of our ability to deal with them. This health problem was out of her control. All her money was gone. She had no way of repairing her situation. She was unclean. She could do nothing to change that. That's where we all are regarding what we call our sin problem. Isaiah said in chapter 59, verses 1 and 2, the arm of the Lord is not too short to save, nor is his ear too dull to hear, but your iniquities have separated you from your God. Your sins have hidden his face from you so that he will not hear. But this didn't stop her. In verse 44, we read that she came from behind and touched the border of his garment, and immediately her flow of blood stopped. The world is full of people in all the same conditions of desperation that we just described, yet the majority of them are either looking in the wrong places to find remedies, entertainment, relationships, monies, pills, surgeries, or they've given up altogether. This was a tenacious woman. She was not one of those people who, when you tell her that she's got some problem, some incurable disease, that she just lays down and lets it destroy her. She was a fighter. She wouldn't give up. She was fighting a losing battle, however. Her body was winning the battle and destroying her health. Again, she'd lost the money battle. And even if she'd had all the money in the world, some diseases simply cannot be fixed. But she was still fighting. She was still looking for a way to be healed. There are people who live their lives just pushing the guilt away, fighting the depression, fighting the despair with one more activity, one more experience of being entertained or moment of excitement or drugs or alcohol. Then there are those who've come to realize that only God can solve their problem of despair. And they're on a journey to find him, and they simply will not give up until they have touched the hem of his garment, as this woman did. There are several things that could have discouraged her from making this effort, but she didn't give up. There was a tremendous crowd surrounding Jesus that could have been quite a discouragement to her. It might not sound like a great obstacle, but when you consider her health, when you consider how on occasions the crowds were so raucous that Jesus was concerned that they would crush him, we're told here how they thronged him and pressed up on him. She was putting herself at somewhat a risk to even do this. Then you consider the attitude of the disciples. They tended to resent others interfering with Jesus in any way, and even on occasions they prevented people from coming into Jesus' presence and gaining access to him. You have the importance of Jesus' mission, how she could have feared interrupting Jesus as he's going on a very important endeavor. You consider the appearance. Many people are concerned about their appearance. They don't want to appear publicly because of their appearance. She was pale, she was poor, she was pitiful. Curtain certainly could have dissuaded her from making any efforts, and still she pressed through to Jesus. Matthew's account adds, and Mark's does as well, she said to herself, "If only I may touch his garment, I shall be made well." Verses 45 and 46 tell of her deliverance. We're told in verse 44 that immediately when she touched the hem of his garment, the flow of her blood stopped. Verse 45 says, "And Jesus said, 'Who touched me?' When all denied it, Peter and those with him said, 'Master, the multitudes throng you and press you, and you say, "Who touched me?" But Jesus said, 'Somebody touched me, for I perceived power going out from me.'" Her deliverance came from contact with the Lord, from touching Jesus. It didn't come from whatever efforts she may have made personally regarding her health choices. It didn't come from whatever she was able to purchase financially. It didn't come from the medical community. This was a touch of faith. You know, there's a difference in a casual touch or an incidental brush and a touch with purpose. People come to Jesus from different motives and with different levels of faith. Some say, well, I'm not really sure he can help me. I'll kind of investigate this. I'll spend some time with it. Yeah, I read my Bible and I do this and I do that. I go to church services, but I'm not sure he can help me, or I'm not sure he's willing to help me. Some have accused this woman of being superstitious, that she was almost paganistic in her thinking, that if she could just touch something that belonged to him, perhaps seems to be the idea. All I know is this woman had no doubt that if she made contact with Jesus, it would cure her problem. Do we have that kind of faith? Whatever our problems are in this life, are we convinced that contact with Jesus will be the only true and lasting cure? Somebody says, well, I have financial problems. How's Jesus going to help with that? They may say, are you telling me that if I become wealthy, or rather that if I turn my life over to the Lord, I'll become wealthy? Well, I'm not saying that. But he can help straighten out your priorities. He may help eliminate your fascination with fun or your desire for material things. It may just help you learn to be content with what you have. Those are blessings, aren't they? This woman exercised greater faith than the healthy ones around her. It's not uncommon at all. It's like the woman who came washing Jesus' feet at the home of Simon the Pharisee. The greater the need, the greater the gratitude. Only those who recognize their great need approach Jesus with the right attitude. And then we see our Lord's response to her faith. He was sensitive to her touch. He was not aware. He was unaware. He was not oblivious. Peter tells us to cast all your cares on him, for he cares for you. He demonstrates that in this account. He recognized that he had healed someone. He said, power has gone out from me. He assured her. In verse 48, he says, daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Used a very tender term of compassion that would have no doubt been quite meaningful to someone who had been isolated so long by her uncleanness. Many surround Christ who never touch him. Then verse 47, when Jesus made this statement, somebody touched me, we're told that the woman came forth and made her declaration, if you will. It says, when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him. She declared to him in the presence of all the people the reason she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. She came trembling. Then she told him why she'd touched him. She told the crowd what had happened. But why did Jesus press her to confess what she had done? He wasn't being rude. He wasn't being inconsiderate. He wasn't being unkind. Fact is, confession was for her own benefit. There is benefit in confession. It's cathartic. It strengthens a person's resolve to declare something publicly if they're sincere about it. Further, if she'd merely slipped away, she would not have had the opportunity to meet Jesus personally. She would not have heard his words of encouragement, his words of comfort, acceptance, and assurance. And we noted earlier that this happened while Jesus was on the road to heal Jairus' daughter. I'm not sure, but it's likely that Jairus may have gotten a little perturbed about this delay because he knew that things were very critical with his daughter. He may have resented this a bit, and so this woman's confession was no doubt an encouragement to Jairus. He just witnessed another miracle by Jesus. on someone who believed and touched his clothes. But it would only be moments after this, in fact, immediately, that Jairus would learn that his daughter was dead. We just read in verse 48, Jesus said, "Daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Verse 49 says, "While he was still speaking, someone came from the ruler of the synagogue's house saying to him, 'Your daughter is dead. Do not trouble the teacher.'" His natural inclination might be to immediately cast blame on this woman. It would be harder to do so with her confession still in his mind and with having seen that grateful face connected with the healing. But her words have endured. I'm sure there was a lot of excited chatter going on in that crowd. But the only one in the crowd whose words are known today are the words of this woman. In touching Jesus, she was able to touch others. We need to be people who are concerned enough with our spiritual situation, with our sin problem, that we press through to Jesus, that we come to Jesus with all our needs, that we pay no attention to the doubters, to the skeptics, to the critics in the crowd. This woman received more than she anticipated. She was healed from her illness, but more than that, she was accepted with love and compassion. Jesus is truly the only hope of the hopeless. He had cast out many demons of a man who was hopeless in the account just prior to this one. The account following, just moments after this, he brought to life a girl who was dead and beyond hope. And then in this account, he healed this woman whose physical condition without Jesus' help was incurable and hopeless. You can be a part of the crowd who's following and hanging around Jesus and who never receives any blessing from him. You can be one of those who press up on him and throng upon him. Or you can be one of those who reach out in faith to Jesus and allow him to truly meet all of your needs. Sir James Young Simpson, a man who died in 1870, was a Scottish obstetrician. He was a significant figure in the history of medicine. He was the first to demonstrate the anesthetic properties of chloroform on humans, and he helped to popularize the drug for use in medicine. There are a lot of scientists, inventors, and discoverers who were men of faith, and this man was one of them. It's recorded that when he was dying, a friend of his said to him, "You will soon be resting on the Lord's bosom." He humbly replied, "I don't know if I can do that, but I have hold on the hem of his garment." We often try everything we can think of to cure depression, to make ourselves happy, to entertain ourselves, to fight boredom. We watch movies, we read books, we glance through magazines, we play games, we spend time on the internet or on the phone. And these activities may be fine in their own place, but when we use them to fill the void that only Christ can fill, we have a problem. And it will only get worse. Mark's account adds a line that neither Matthew nor Luke states in theirs. Mark 5, 25 and 26 says, "A certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years, had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse." The things we often turn to have this very effect. We think they will help us. We think they will make us happy. We think they will cure our depression. But they only make us worse. Do you want to be made better? Christ is the only hope for that. If we can help you in some way to accomplish that this morning, please come forward while we stand together and sing.